So you've got a school leader who's been around for a few years, who's been leading a change process that's been gaining steam, but all of a sudden that person decides to retire or leave for another district. Is that the end of change in that school? That's the question that Bruce and I talk about in episode number 14 of the Modern Learners Podcast. Great that you're here listening with us and learning with us, hopefully. In this episode, we're talking about what needs to be in place so that change can sustain when the leadership changes. And we also get into a little piece of Mary Meeker's Internet Trends Report, which on an annual basis just turns Bruce and me into total geeks as we try to divine the future based on her research. So thanks for listening, everyone. Hope you enjoy it. And don't forget to like us on iTunes, tell your friends. But for now, enjoy episode number 14 of the Modern Learners Podcast. So, Bruce, I want to tell you, I had an interesting conversation with a school leader yesterday. And she told me that her superintendent of, I think, 5 or 6 years, someone who had been in charge of or leading a real interesting change project at their school, was retiring, had announced his retirement. But the first words out of her mouth were, "I'm not panicking," which I thought was really interesting. And I saw her a couple times, you know, during the day, and she kept saying, "Don't worry, I'm not panicking. And I thought, you know, it's interesting, and I thought it might be a good conversation for us to have around, you know, what happens when people who have been in charge of change and really spearheading it, you know, what happens when they decide to leave, retire, go somewhere else? And particularly, what needs to be in place for that not to derail the change process? Because certainly leadership leaving is survivable. But you know as well as I do that, you know, we've seen it many times where change is starting to roll down the hill and pick up some momentum, and then all of a sudden there's a shift in the person at the top, or, you know, some of the people who are highly engaged in that process, and the whole thing kind of falls apart when the next person comes in and doesn't really, you know, pick up that mantle. So I wonder, you know, what do you think schools need to do and have in place in order to survive a change like that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Will. And one, as we know, we've talked about a lot, and I think it's a real concern for many schools and school districts, because so often they attach a process of change of the nature we're talking about to an individual. And this is the real test of the depth of change. This is the time where they find out just how serious the change is, and where the driver for it's coming from. And both of us have seen way too often what I call the impact that change, when change is driven by hero leadership. And it's a slightly cynical label, I realise, but I'm talking about often a politically inspired type of change leadership, where people have ridden in on the white horse, and let me be fair, very often are incredibly well intentioned and have an idea about what they're trying to do, but don't have the process in place to have that change deep within their school community. And as much as they can drive the change personally from their style and form of leadership, when it doesn't go much deeper than themselves and maybe one or two others, it moves with them. And when they leave, of course, it not only causes a vacuum, but I think it actually causes often some degree of backlash, because it isn't embedded. It isn't part of the school culture or the school's culture or the district's culture. And it's really attached to the beliefs of an individual. And I think that's what we are trying to address in Change School, probably as a real priority, that I think people do understand that this superficial level of change that many of us are used to just isn't good enough. It's not the sort of change that is sustainable, and it's not the sort of change that I think benefits anybody. It gives very short-term benefit. It's a sort of change that where you might see a shift in thinking within a school or a school district over, you know, 3 to 4 years. But at the time that someone retires or leaves, there's not only panic, but frankly, for some of them, it's relief. They sort of think, well, you know,
right.
that leader's
right.
moving on now, so I can get back to doing what I was doing before, don't you think?
And you know, a lot of it is change that really isn't change.
That's right.
It's the perception of change. I remember from my own history, a superintendent that we had that came in the late 1990s, way back then, and
yep.
had this really interesting vision for technology where he said, we're going to put 5 computers in every classroom. And at the time, we had people coming from all over the world to see our 5 computers in every classroom. And that was a really big deal. And he also made some prototype classrooms. I think there was a science one, there was an English one, which were really interesting. And we were doing Polycom kind of interviews back in the late 90s, which again was way ahead of its time. Obviously we're kind of doing the same thing right now on Skype for free. Back then it cost a lot of money. But it was interesting that it really was his vision and a few others in the school. And once he left, it pretty much all went away. And that the vision really was to put 5 computers in every classroom. And, you know, full stop. That was the end of the vision. We're going to put 5 computers in every classroom and then not really be sure what we're going to do with those. And so it ended up, of course, where kids were typing their papers and, you know, we were doing internet research when we could. But, you know, you mentioned the word culture over and over. And I think that that's really what we're talking about here. And at this particular school where I was at, this district, there is a culture around change, but it still is there a culture around change with the people who are making the decision about the next person coming in? And to what extent is there a belief system that new person will be hired around, if you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, too often, I think, you know, people get sucked in by really good looking resumes and by all sorts of grandiose visions, but really don't talk about what the fundamental beliefs are in terms of how kids learn. And so the culture, while really important, well, I guess let me ask it this way. So at the end of the day, even if you have a really deep culture of learning that and one that is built around change and innovation and all of that, can that all be subverted by a group of 5 board members who really are just kind of looking at resumes and don't really have an investment in that? I mean, how important is it, do you think, to build the capacity of the people who are making those decisions? I mean, it's an obvious answer, right? Let me ask it differently. How would you build the capacity of the people making those decisions?
It's another great question, which I think people often overlook, and it's that above and below type, embracing people in the process. So people often think if they're in a leadership role, they've got to make sure that they have support from their assistant leadership, that they have a support across their school community. And sure, they look at keeping, I'll call it their reporting structures. In other words, their board or their district or their council, school council, whatever governance structure they've got. They look at keeping them informed of the process, but they don't get buy-in from them. And
right.
I think we both know and feel very strongly that, you know, a board isn't meant to run a school. They appoint principals
right.
to run schools, but they nonetheless not only should be kept informed, but they certainly should buy into the vision and the mission of what's going on within the school or the school district. And I would say, in the point you're highlighting, is in most cases they don't.
But wouldn't you say, though, it's crucial that those people are also in on the process of developing the mission and
absolutely.
Vision and the principles, right?
Yep, totally.
Yeah,
totally. That's how we get them. That's how we get them to have that buy-in. So it was interesting. We're talking about this now. Last weekend, I was working with a very prominent school here in Melbourne, and And in fact, a third of the members of the workshop were in fact the school council, or school, it's called the school council down
Right.
here. And they were involved in the workshop. Another probably quarter of the people involved were in a sort of ancillary role, but had some responsibility at the employing level, but they were also involved in the workshop. And then beyond that, there were school leadership and representatives from across the school. And might I say also including school leadership, student leadership.
Yep.
And I've got to say to you, mate, that we just talked about going up the tree and into the employing body and school districts. But boy, oh boy, these kids that were, these were actually school, in Australia we call them school captains, gave some of the most profound insights into, I guess, student needs and student awareness and also suggestions and ideas. So that engagement, when we talk about, you know, telling a new story across the school community, starts with kids. And that's where we've really got to make sure that they're involved, but at the same time ensure that those people at the school district levels, at the school council and board levels, are also buying into the process, so that they're not just mouthing the story, they understand the background to it and what its origins are.
I can't tell you how rare it is to have board members in the room. You know, it maybe happens 2% of the time. Yeah. And kids in the room maybe happens 10% of the time, still pretty rare. Yeah. But I totally agree. And so if the people who are making the decisions have not been a part of that whole conversation, ideally from the beginning, but at least in, not just informed of it, but included in it. And I think that's a big distinction, right? Because you can, you know, send all sorts of emails and missives and show all sorts of videos about what's happening to keep them updated with air quotes, but that doesn't necessarily increase their ability to understand and to be invested in the change that's happening. And then use that as a context for hiring that next person. But the other part of it too, as you were talking, you know, and you were talking about students, and I, you know, again, this isn't rocket science, but it surprises me how little, you know, how rarely it happens. But there is also then an important capacity building function with parents as well, and with all community members, right? This runs across the org chart and outside of the school, where you really have to get to the point where when that leader decides that she's leaving, that the people who are in the school and parents of the kids in the school and all of those types of people who are invested in the education of what's happening in that place demand continuity, demand coherence to the vision and mission that exist. And you know, and really advocate and articulate the requirement that these types of principles, these beliefs, and these types of visions continue with whoever's hired next, right?
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting you raise that, because I can again go back to the school I was working with last weekend and talk about some input from a school board member and from one of these students. So that I'd given, you know, I did a bit of a sort of a, you know, an opener and talked about the context of the modern world and the influence that it should have on what we're doing in our schools, as you and I do and as people listening to this podcast to be very familiar with. Two interesting feedback. Didn't come back directly after I'd done it, but say an hour or two later into the workshop, two interesting comments came which support exactly what you're saying. The first was from the student. So later in the day, he put his hand up and he said, you know, the one thing that maybe you're not paying attention to is that we talk about these changes in the world around us and the uncertainty that's happening in that space. Sometimes maybe you don't understand, but kids don't necessarily like that. You know, you might be getting excited about change and telling us how we've got to adapt to it. But that uncertainty can also bring unpredictability, and it's not a world that necessarily everyone's familiar with or understands how to adjust to it. People make the assumption that kids, because they're part of that, are bought into it. And he said, you know, we've got to take that on board. He wasn't pushing back on it.
Right.
He was just highlighting that. And the second observation came from, in fact, he was the deputy chairman of the board, and he made the comment similarly, but in a slightly different way. He said, because a couple of times in the discussion, you know, in fact, it was the principal, a couple of other people had made comment about the fact that, you know, they needed to get momentum for this shift to a modern learning environment, and they had to help bring parents on board to help parents understand the need for this. This guy goes, hey, hey, slow down there. We're in this world. You know, we know about this stuff. Sure, we've got some parents who don't, and we've got some parents who need some work. But he said, you've got to understand, people like most of us in this room, we engage in this every day. And all we've got to do is bring some coherence to our world and align it with what you're doing here within the school. But don't, whatever you do, think for one second that parents aren't going to become very much the drivers for this shift. We may not have been, you know, 10 years ago, but today it's part of our world, and we want to see schools make that change. And I thought both those comments were really telling, because I think it brought people back to a reality that the drivers for this aren't just coming from school leaders. It is genuinely, there's depth in the understanding across school communities if we engage them in the conversation and the process of change across that school community.
And does that resonate with your experience? Do you think that by and large parents are stepping up to this conversation in ways that make continuity more more likely if leadership at the top changes?
The answer is yes, with brackets, because I think that we both know that there are still a quite large number of people in the wider community who either aren't aware, you know, of the impact of this change, or don't understand what its implications are for schools. So we still do need to have that conversation, but by far there is a much larger move from within parents and the school communities for this shift than there ever has before. Before, if you go back to your point, your story before about the school you're involved with, in the 90s when we put computers in schools, you know, there's a lot of push. Well, there was a degree of pushback from parents because we were really moving a bit ahead of where the community was at, and the whole concept of moving kids from a medium that they were familiar with to one that they were barely just getting used to themselves in the home did certainly cause a degree of concerns. But I think now parents are much more aware of it and are becoming some of the main drivers for this shift in practice within schools. They don't quite know what it should look like. They don't know what the implications are for their sons or daughters, but I think they're certainly seeking a deeper conversation to help them better understand that, and I don't think that's happening enough.
So I'm going to disagree. I don't see that as much. I really don't. I think that there are more and more parents, perhaps, especially at the elementary level, who are open to this conversation and in some cases, but still very rare, in some cases driving it and pushing it. At the high school level, I just don't see much going on in terms of parents engaging in a conversation around really different. I think they're advocating for laptops and they want the technology and they want, you know, the stuff that looks different. But at the end of the day, when you start putting kids or giving kids opportunities to create projects that they are interested in that kind of deviate from the traditional narrative and experience of what parents, you know, had when they were in school, I think most parents still, to me, seem to step up and say, whoa, wait a second, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, let's give them technology, but let's not really change what they do, you know. And I don't disagree that there is movement in that direction, but I don't see it with in too many of the schools that I've worked with or too many of the schools that I've visited where parents have been kind of that integral part of that conversation, which, you know, I think is absolutely required. It's absolutely necessary. And so that, again, kind of turns around and puts the onus on the school or the district to go out and reach out to those parents and get them engaged in some way. And that I've seen, right? I've seen when, like our friend Lisa Brady up in New York State goes out and has book studies with parents and, you know, goes and has coffees in their houses, shows most likely to succeed, for instance, and engages in real kind of heady conversations about, you know, what that looks like. That definitely builds capacity for then parents to advocate and to be a part of a conversation, you know, when she leaves. Because, you know, I don't know when Lisa's going to leave, but at some point she's going to go. And at that point, then I think her parents in her district are probably going to really advocate for someone who's going to stay the course. To, you know, keep making those changes happen. But I do think that it takes a concerted effort on the part of leadership to go out and bring those parents in. Maybe in Australia it's a little bit different, but here I just don't see them knocking on the door before they've been invited, if you know what I'm saying.
I'm going to agree with you, because maybe I think you're clarifying the point that I think what we've got firstly is there is a much higher degree of awareness amongst parents and the community about the changes in the world around us as part of our lives. Again, if you go back just 10 years ago, when, for instance, social hit us, you know, or just 15 years ago, you know, people were very soft about it and they didn't really respond much. I think people today, absolutely, I think they look at the world around us, they look at the changes, they look at the impact of technology. They know that in some cases they think too much is happening. They have concerns about some of these things. I think what they say to themselves is, how relevant is the school experience to what I can see in this world around me? What they don't understand is the gap between, I'll call it the implication gap, you know. What are the implications of what's happening in that world for what my child is doing at school? And usually that means, and therefore, how prepared are they to cope with that world? How ready are they for employment? What does it mean in terms of their careers and whatever else? I don't think, and that's what you're talking that Lisa does, and that's where both of us have seen in the very successful schools, the schools that have had transition and succession in place and that have been able to continue the change process. They've engaged in those deep conversations because we both know that that's why we're committed to Change School, is that the idea of standing up and doing a presentation for parents once a year about change in our society doesn't resonate, doesn't have any impact. It requires long-term, deep conversations with all stakeholders for them to understand the implications. Here's the world around us, the world, and this is now the modern context in which our schools are situated. What are the implications of that for what we do in our schools, and what are the implications for the learning that our young people are going to take on board to prepare them for that? And I think parents have question marks there. You're right. They're not driving that part of the process. That's the process. That's the piece that we have to take up and have. And as you said, it can be as simple a process as book studies. And we both, there's a number of schools that do those sorts of things. It can be a whole range of, you know, another colleague of ours from Change School One talks about how he, I was always quite, you know, interested that he got up at 5 o'clock each weekday, would spend an hour looking through, you know, his Twitter feed and his material. And when he found articles of interest and references and links that he wanted to share, he'd then include them in his weekly newsletter to parents so that he was helping them not only understand the rate at which change is happening in the world around, but more importantly, the implications of what that would mean for the students at the school.
And just we may have a little news on some parent context information coming up here in the next couple of weeks, but I won't spoil that. So, you know, I was thinking as you were talking too, a couple of things, right? So how important is it then for leaders to kind of groom a protege or a replacement, and what are the dangers of doing that? Because you have to admit, right, that on some level, it's good to get a different perspective in. It's good to get people who bring different experiences, different viewpoints, as long as, right, and that's fill in the blank, as long as they don't deviate too much from the direction and the overall direction of where the change process is going, right? So if we're all under the modern umbrella, then it's fine if we have different kind of viewpoints within there. In fact, it's probably pretty healthy. So is there a danger in kind of grooming someone to take over For when you leave?
Yeah, again, it's a great question, and also I think we'd both agree it's one that people don't ask enough. I think that too often we just take we make assumptions that, well, when this person retires or moves on, we'll find someone else. Well,
Right.
that's not really how this process should take place. And you're right, you can't clone leadership. When you try and clone leadership, in fact, if I think about it, I can think of a school not far away from here that really tried to do that. It was a school that it was a very prominent school, big public school that had exceptional leadership, and the supporting leadership, really did an exceptional, an excellent job in making sure that everything was, consistent with the vision and the mission of what was happening. But when they sought to replace the person at the top, they essentially imported the best way of probably putting it in is that they appointed the implementers as leaders rather than the visionaries. Now, that's a little crude way of putting it, and it's not very fair, but leadership is about both vision and, implementation, execution, whatever else. So you can't make an assumption that automatically, someone who's been working with a leader and helping execute
Right.
vision and making everything put in everything in place is going to be the ideal leader, because succession requires a lot more than just being able to implement an idea. It's about having that vision. It's about bringing people on board. And I always think, and I think it's the hardest thing, people might mouth this off, but I think they forget that the true measure of leadership is not what you do when you're there, but what you leave behind. And I don't see enough people who truly believe that. They really, to be quite honest, it's really to do with the person's, and I'm not saying this in a demeaning way, it's to do with the person's ego. Are they happy to, as you said, develop supporting leadership to a point that they know that when they leave, they'll be replaced by someone who hopefully will do an even better job than they've done.
Right.
And I don't see a lot of people who are happy saying that to themselves. And I think, understand it, I think it's that people are, it's only natural that people want to think, well, whoa, I did a great job. I hope this person's able to continue my work. Well, no, it isn't your work. It's your work on behalf of the school and the school district.
Well, I think we'd probably both agree that the leader has to create a culture, and that's the most important part. It's not, as you said, it's not about the person himself or herself. It's about the culture that they leave behind. And one of our favorite terms is this idea of perpetual beta, that
Absolutely.
it's a culture of ongoing change, and that really, if you've done it right, there shouldn't be any panic. There shouldn't be any concern or real worry about what's going to happen now, because those roots are deep, and the people who are in that culture are all pulling in the same direction, and they, like I said before, will really advocate and demand even that direction continue. But it's hard, and I can certainly understand how there is concern when leadership moves on. But I think that if the right fundamentals are in place, if the work is really about, as you said, not the person, but the culture around that person, and creating the conditions, if you will, right? We use that phrase a lot too. Then, if those conditions are there, then I think that change at the top is imminently survivable. And I want to move on just a little bit real fast, because today was the day that the Mary Meeker Internet Trends report came out. Talk about perpetual beta. And as you were saying too earlier about having contexts and understanding what's happening in the world, this is probably one of the most important reports that comes out on an annual basis. And while it's not focused directly on education, it certainly has huge implications for what we're talking about here, in terms of how do we conceive the world, how do we prepare kids for the world, what are the trends that we can see moving into the future that are going to be of real importance to us. So I'm wondering, you've had a chance. I haven't really dug into it too much, but I know we were talking about this earlier. You've had a chance to kind of sift through it. What are you seeing in there that strikes you? And maybe, who knows, maybe we'll do a whole podcast on this next week. But early reactions, Bruce. What are you seeing in there that is interesting?
And just also to close on that, just a comment there, because when you look at this report from Mary Meeker, I think when we talk about succession and when we talk about, long-term commitment to this process, I think people, they do want leadership certainty. If we look around and we look at the changes that Mary Meeker's talking about, and we talk about this uncertain world that I made reference to the student commenting on in the workshop, I think bit above that, people within a school want to see leadership that does have a vision that will address this, that will cope with this, will know how to interpret it. And so it's in the school's interests to have someone who can carry the torch forward, because that leadership certainty about here's someone who knows, here are a group of people who know where we're going, and despite all these changes in the world around us, they are able to help us build the context in which our schools are now functioning and make it real for our students. So, in answer to your question, I think, as I'm with you, we both, I mean, Mary Meeker does an amazing job with this work,
Yeah, it's
and you know,
really.
and I think everybody, in industry, corporate sector, government, particularly policymakers, everyone looks across this report. And just for people who may not have come across it before, there'll be links to it in our newsletter this week, which will be going out later today. And we'll make, as Will said, we'll probably talk about it next week in detail. But I mean, there's 350 slides, 355 slides in the presentation.
It requires an adult beverage.
It does.
Tea is not going to cut
That's got that,
it,
my friend. And there's lots of statistics and data and a lot of big data. But above all that, you can also pick, she does a phenomenal job of going deep as much as you wanted, but also pulling out some trends, and that's really her business. And the first is this massive shift to mobile is continuing, but slowing. So you'd have, I mean, there's a limit to how many times you can grow something, and she's talking about the smartphone growth is slowing down. But the shift in terms of the spend for advertisers and for marketing, she sees, around about now it's moving from mainstream media to, mobile and the internet, and that people are now spending money on advertising online ahead of their spend on TV and traditional media. And I mean, we can say we've seen that coming, but I think 2017 is when the crossover happens, and aligned with that is the two big, big thumpers of organizations, Mr. Facebook and Mr. Google, who have something like 80% of that spend. And so, this has implications at a number of levels. Firstly, the data they are now collecting across billions, and we mean billions, of people who are accessing advertising through those mediums, is just a little bit better than they used to be able to collect when you went and bought a newspaper. I
Just
go
a
down to
little.
my I
A
went
wee bit.
my local shop and part with $2 and have a newspaper, and
That's right.
nobody knows that little old Bruce has gone and bought a newspaper.
Now they
You
know
click.
what story you started on, how long you stayed on it, what words you read, what links you clicked on, what ads you looked at, how long you looked at them, and on and on and on and on, right?
Is that good?
Yeah. Well, if you're in the advertising business, it is. I mean, that type of data, right? That all those algorithms, that was the one piece that I saw. I was about 30 slides in, and she started talking about the algorithms that are out there now. And I just don't think we have anywhere near our brains wrapped around the stuff that's happening right now. And I kind of chuckle about it, but it's not a funny chuckle. I mean, it's kind of like a, what do we do about this? And what are the implications for our kids who are now growing up in a world where they've had data collected on them since they were 10? And that, they've had profiles that people have been building on them they're going to get such micro-targeted messaging, advertising, news, media, all that kind of stuff that when we, you know, we talk about the echo chamber and we talk about how difficult it is to bring diversity into our news streams, into our Twitter streams, all that type of stuff, it's just going to be harder and harder and harder, I think, moving forward. And it's going to be especially difficult if we're not helping kids develop some, you know, again, skills, literacies, and dispositions around managing life in this moment in a very mobile, constantly changing, constantly micro-targeted kind of world where we have less and less, well, I shouldn't say that we have control over it, but we have less and less understanding of how to control it. And it's this kind of, if you look at it, this battle between marketers and advertisers and individuals, which the marketers are totally winning because the individuals don't have a concept of what's going on. And so I do think that reflects back to our work in schools.
Yeah, and that's a really, really good point. That's the key point, is that as aware as people are of this constant change and the exponential, you know, rate of change, they don't fully understand the implications of it for themselves and for their kids. And I can think of two quick examples. 15-odd years ago, probably 20 years ago in Australia, they tried to bring in what they called the Australia card, which was essentially give everyone an identity number, very similar to what you have for social security numbers. Huge pushback against it. Didn't come through. We don't have it, and who knows whether we ever will have. Now, that was just giving people a number. I mean, these people, if Google said all I know is that Bruce's number, you know, 647,000, he would be very unhappy. He knows so much about me and about everyone who's on there. It's crazy to think when our level of privacy and you know, invasion of privacy was at a point where it was just the assignment of a number. Everyone understood that. They knew that. I don't want it.
Right.
The second one is down here when you ring up a government, pretty much most corporations these days, you are obliged to put on a warning message on the phone which says, please understand your message may be taped for future purposes.
Same here, yep.
Well, give me a break. I mean, gee whiz, I'm thinking of the little Martians who must be sitting back there going through all our bloody phone calls.
Did you say Russians or Martians? I'm sorry. I thought you said Russians. Sorry.
Yes. So this is like exponentially much more information than anyone can ever imagine. Yeah. And people don't understand. I mean, they're starting to get, you know, the ads thrown back at them when they do search or when they're on social. But what are the implications of this, Will? Where do we start? And I know we don't have time to talk about it in depth this week, but just some comments. What do you think of what are the touch points for parents in addressing this knowledge now? And how can teachers respond to this sort of information that Mary Meek has shared?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's one that I think we will leave till the next conversation, because there's so much to talk about there that can't do it justice in just a couple of minutes. But if you are listening to this and you haven't read that report, and you're in education, I think it's required reading, and a lot of it is not going to make sense. And even, you know, I don't think Bruce nor I, certainly I'm not suggesting that I understand almost any of this stuff in terms of its larger implications. But it is really important to have a sense of where things are moving, because it is all happening extremely fast right now. And if there's one kind of touch point every year that puts a kind of flag in the ground as to where we are at this moment, it is this report. And it is more so than anything else that comes out. Definitely urge anyone listening to this to take a look at that. And one new little feature for our podcast is that we have, as you'll see on the post on our blog at modernlearners.com, if you come and look at the podcast there, We have a link to SpeakPipe, which is your opportunity to leave us a voicemail, ask us a question, and comment on anything we've said, which we would love to then bring into our podcast next week, hear your voice and hear your questions for us as we start doing this on or continue to do this on a regular basis. So please make sure you check that out. And Bruce, it's as always, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Hope the weather down under is not getting too cold. You guys don't get snow in winter, though, do you? Nah.
No,
you don't
no, have to worry about that. It's a bit chilly, but not snowy.
Yeah, you poor thing. But yeah, but anyway, great talking to you. And we'll see everyone again next week. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Hey, thanks for listening. And don't forget to come back next week for another conversation between Bruce and me about high bar change in schools. If you haven't read our latest white paper on the 8 attributes of modern educational leaders, you can head over to bit.ly/8attpod and download it. And if you're really getting serious about change in schools and you're a leader who wants to learn how to do that and connect with all sorts of other people from around the world who are doing that, please visit us at change.school, where we're already taking signups for our third cohort that starts in September. So we hope to see you there as well. Have a great week, everyone, and thanks again for listening.